all gone.
Yeah. Well, all right. This will be interesting.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We've been playing with our audio equipment for the past 20 minutes.
Yeah, we were trying to increase the quality, but that wasn't happening.
So everyone was jealous because I have the deepest voice somehow.
Yeah,
we would. And I'll have to be honest, it does sound pretty low.
Like,
you sound awesome.
Oddly low.
Strangely jealous right now.
Well, my little brother set up a new podcast setup for us. We got a new mixing board, and we're actually recording it into an actual computer now.
Because we've had a lot of failures. The H4N, we'll finish a podcast, and it'll be really good. We're all proud of it. And then afterwards, it doesn't exist.
Yep.
Well, all of our podcasting equipment before was just a culmination of things we found.
Yeah,
more or less. And so now we're just trying to do it how real podcasters do it.
Yeah, trying to step it up a notch. You guys,
and we're not even quite there, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
But episode 31. It took us 31 episodes to get to some real podcasting equipment. So.
And today is June 16th.
That is today.
Yep. So we're recording on the day of release.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just full disclosure, we haven't figured out how to use this stuff yet. So if it sounds weird. We know.
Yeah, we're aware that it's different. Yeah.
We need to get my brother in here for a training course now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he should just sit in on a podcast and just let
move buttons.
So anyway, thanks everyone for listening, and you can thank us later for deleting that beginning 20 minutes of us goofing around.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty bad.
So now that we're doing a real podcast, what are we talking about today, guys?
We're going to be talking about quadcopters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we had some good criticism. People said that they want to hear less about
our nonsense.
Our nonsense and more about RC stuff in general, which I think is a great point.
Yeah, we kind of start derailing because there's so many fun things going on and we want to share it with our friends.
We're always so busy, yeah. So let us know. We do listen what you guys want to hear. Mm-hmm. But today we're going to be talking about RC stuff, specifically multi-rotors. Yeah.
There's been a lot of multi-rotors in our lives lately.
Yes. We've been getting multi-rotors in the mail. We've been building our own multi-rotors. Yep. We've been
doing a lot with multi-rotors. But you know what? It's a specific size. And also, we have some products. It's been a long time since Rotor Bones has had anything new come to the store. And we're finally getting ready to change that. So it seems like between racing quads and new products, it's pretty cool.
So we're going to be talking about kind of all things multi-rotors today.
Yeah.
A lot of mini quads. And also apologize for people that can hear people coming in and out the door. It's not much we can do about that. Real quick, before we dive into other people's products and that sort of thing, just out of curiosity, what is going on with the Rotor Bones line and what's coming down the pipeline?
Well, it's been in the works for a long time, and it actually was started with Chad. It's going to be called the Rotor Bones Electro Hub, mm-hmm. and this was from feedback from a lot of different people. They like the Anycopter Hub, but you still have a wasp nest. Can I say wasp nest? Wasp.
Yeah, hornet's nest, bird's nest.
Yeah, you have a whole nest of wires, and that was clunky. It caused a lot of issues, and people were like, you know what, everyone's doing distribution board, and, you know, Chad started the ball rolling. Well, it's taken such a long time. We got the prototypes in, we tested it, ordered our first batch, and they were bad. We didn't like the quality, just the coating on it was horrible. So we stopped that, and we're waiting on a new batch.
So basically, what he's talking about is the Electro Hub, which is going to be the replacement for the Anycopter.
Yep.
It's not wooden anymore. It's actually a PDB board.
PCB. PCB. Papa Charlie Bravo. Oh. That's really awkward.
Whose car?
Hopefully not mine.
Did I mention we live in the city of City of Canton?
Well, that's our parking lot.
Whose is it? Well, that's awkward.
Somebody better get on that.
Oh. Was it yours?
Or maybe it wasn't.
Oh, maybe it was Roberto.
Roberto, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So going back to that, Alex, you're right. It's a PCB board.
PCB board with power distribution.
Very strategically placed power distribution.
So basically, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's a... it requires soldering, and a little thing on soldering, the personal experience of mine, I used to be the kind of guy who hated soldering, didn't ever want to do it. I would highly recommend getting a halfway decent soldering iron, and just I'm by no means a pro at soldering, but it's such a useful skill, and it really helps clean up your builds. If you're sick of having wires around and your build's not looking as clean as everybody else's at the field or whatever, soldering is the key to all that. Yeah. And it takes a good solder, good soldering iron, and then also a little bit of flux.
Mm-hmm.
and those little pincher clamps that help you hold the wires together.
You know, Harbor Freight is my best friend, and those pincher clamps are like that whole helping hands is what they call it, is like $8.
Yeah, how much is our soldering iron that we have out there? So
our soldering iron's a little on the pricey side. I think it's about $130, but frankly, I use one at home I got for $40, and it looks very similar to the Weller that we have, and I love it. I have zero problems with it. I got that one actually from Laser Toys. But you can, and the difference between a good quality and a bad quality one is maybe $20.
Yeah,
you know, you can go up really
and,
high.
And I think the key is having a halfway decent quality one, because I had terrible experiences soldering in the past, and I think it was because I had a really cheap soldering pencil.
You don't want those a pencil. Cheap ones. Not for the gauge wire we commonly use, and also you want the right solder. You want the right rosin mix of solder, and you also, I love having a little bit of rosin on the side. To do it, and also tightly wire wrapping, getting all the air out of your band. So whenever you're tinning something, wrap it as tight. You don't want it to be open, because anytime you have air, you have insulation.
Yeah,
and it doesn't accept solder well.
So, anyways, the power distribution on the Electra Hub allows for what, up to 8 ESCs.
Yeah, you can go up to an octocopter, and it also has where the
mini accessory ports.
Exactly.
Terminals, what are those things called?
I don't know what they're called, but they're on the outside, so it's nice. On the inside, you have bigger pads that will accept your ESCs, and on the outside, you have thinner gauge pads that will accept for things like lights, video transmitters, things like that.
Gimbal controllers, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, power outs.
Don't hook your ESCs up to the outside ones, though.
Don't do it.
Because they're not rated for that much power.
Yeah, we sent a couple out for beta testing and got some feedback about that, and that was one thing. We're going to be doing a build video. In the past, we've just shown people how to build the board, the actual frames, but frankly, anyone can figure that out. I'm sorry. Austin's like, talking with his hands.
That's just like, no, I can hear you. That clicky thing you're playing with is in the mic. Just FYI.
Apparently, with better audio equipment, you hear more things.
You hear everything. But
who would have thought?
Every rustle of the pants and everything.
We sounded weird. Long story short, we learned a lot, and we've been trying these out, and we're excited. But also, a lot of the feedback was, hey, you know, I'm just getting the hobby, and you know, I crashed, or they put a bigger motor on original 13370 straights. We're not meant for anything above a 370 size motor. Well, reality is that people are putting a much, much bigger motor on there, and if you hit too hard, it can break the G10, and our goal is not to have people have to constantly buy parts from us, but to give them the ability to crash, repair, and fly again. The quicker you can repair and get back up in the air, and the cheaper, the better it is. So we tried to answer all that.
So just kind of stepping back and looking at the Rotor Bones line as a whole, I mean, a lot of people may not even know what our goal is with the Rotor Bones line, as itself. I mean, obviously, a lot of it's interchangeable, that sort of thing. But, like, I know that there's a specific direction we're looking to go with the Rotor Bones line. You guys want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we want to keep it cheap and affordable and repeatable, most importantly. We're not a fan of proprietary stuff that you have to get directly from the manufacturer. So we like to use common materials like wooden booms that you can get from the hardware store, or you can get carbon fiber booms or aluminum booms if you want. But the option's there if you want to go to Home Depot or Lowe's, pick up the half-inch wooden dowels, or even they sell like wooden or aluminum dowels too.
Yeah.
So basically that's it. And then also kind of like pieces, parts that you can put together, make a ton of different things out of a couple of different parts. So like, for example, with the Electra Hub, we shot the episode or one of the episodes the other day, and we had a tricopter, a T6, which is like a Y6.
Peter made that. It was amazing.
Peter Streeple. And it was a T6. It had a ton of lifting power. And then you made an interesting spider quad.
Yeah, a spider quad, like basically a dead cat.
Then you can also do like hexacopters, octocopters. We hope to experiment with things like spider hexes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of open-ended, so there is no direction. You know, you can do whatever you want pretty much.
With all the bolt patterns you have on there, you don't have to also stay. You can build a tricopter and say, you know what, I like the tricopter, but I really want to make a quad or I want to make a hex. And you don't have to go ahead and scrap your board. You can constantly reuse it. And that was one of the things like you talked about with the wooden booms. If something breaks, we want it to be the thing that breaks. We want it to be the item you can go to a hardware store and pick up if you wish. So God forbid you roll it into a ball and the booms break. We want you to be able to get it back up in the air quickly. So the new motor mounts we have coming out, the simple Delrin landing gears, which have been working really well. That's just a single thicker Delrin piece that's attached with zip ties. We're hoping that a lot of people will be able to learn really, really quick and enter into the hobby. You're going to have crashes, but hopefully you won't have to order replacement parts for us. That's not what we're in the business for.
So the three big things that we talk about with the Rotor Bones line a lot is simple, affordable, and durable.
Yep.
And I think that if we can hit those three things, you know, with any, whatever we do in the future, I think we'll be on the right track.
Yeah, and the first line of products that we released, we learned a lot from.
Yeah, thank you for your feedback.
We learned a lot from even before when we tested, but then also when we started distributing the products and getting feedback from people who are actually using them. For example, we see a ton of multi-rotors with just the motor mount left.
Yeah.
And then they have a makeshift, you know, DIY landing gear. And we take note of that stuff because it matters to us, and we want to make sure that we, when we produce new products in the future, that it's something that's going to last and something that you're not going to have to keep coming back to, you know, spend your money and buy replacement parts.
Yeah, basically, ordering replacement parts, it's good to have replacement parts, but if you order it and you have to, you know, we see a lot of people reordering replacement parts. That means that, you know, they're having crashes that aren't last as long. And it could be from really colossal mm-hmm. crashes, but we want to reduce that amount. We want people to be able to buy the kits, get in the air, and we want to only hear from them when they're getting their friends in the hobby or they're ready to, you know, build a second machine or a third machine, not that they have to put their machine back together.
Yeah, and it would probably be a good time to plug, I know you mentioned it a little bit, but the simple Delrin landing gear that we have on our store. It's like a simplified version. I think David introduced that on the V-tail mm-hmm. build.
Yeah.
Because the V-tail uses 45-degree motor mounts. If you're having trouble with your rotor bones breaking and you don't want to spend as much on replacements and you're still learning and crashing, I'd highly recommend looking into the simple Delrin landing gear. It's just a basic piece of Delrin with two zip ties. And the nice thing about it is it will not break. The zip ties break. So every time you just have to retrieve your landing gear, zip tie back on, and you're good to go again.
Yeah.
Rather than buying expensive parts.
And it still looks really, really good, too. And it mm-hmm. sounds kind of funny. We're talking about our own product, but we want to definitely talk about the negatives and what we've learned and hopefully, you know, evolve from that.
Yeah.
Someone's coming in.
Hi, Jen.
It's raining and Austin's windows are down.
Oh. I'll
be right back.
It's raining.
Austin's windows are down.
Here's Max.
Yeah. I'm glad it rained. So.
Thank you, Jen.
Whose car alarm was going off? Oh, okay, good.
I have a really cool wife, by the way.
Sorry about that, guys.
We just celebrated our 15th year anniversary.
That's awesome.
Yeah, not related to RCs, but you know.
Did you guys do anything great?
Put up a pool for the kids. Got a free pool. You know I'm cheap.
Yeah.
And got a free pool, and I was too cheap to hire it done, so I put it up myself.
Yeah, I think I saw you spreading sand with
my foam booties,
foam board sand shoes.
That was scrap pieces from a leftover Kraken build. So I just folded them underneath there.
That's funny.
But
so yeah. Anyways, we're not bashing our products. We just try to keep an eye on, you know, people's experiences mm-hmm. because it really does matter to us. One of the other things that we've noticed too is price points.
Yes.
Even just in the short year that our multi-rotor products have been out. The price points in the whole market have dropped.
Which is wonderful.
It's awesome.
We're absolutely so excited
about
that.
We're just as excited as everybody else. But the unfortunate thing is we need to do something to change our side of the business to bring down our prices as well.
And that's what excites me, too, is people will still be able to support us, you know, but we were able to increase the experience and lower the cost and still maintain it where it's going to support flight test. So we're really excited when this round comes out that you know, people will be able to get in the hobby cheaper mm-hmm. and have a better experience, still support flight test, and we're still, you know, lowering the price point.
Yes. And also just to explore different possibilities with multi-rotors. Not only multi-rotors, but also, I mean, anything with the Elements line, with the simple firewalls and the thrust vectoring and all that kind of stuff. We want to give you the tools to scratch build, to do your own thing. And with the direction Rotor Bones is going, it's going to allow you to do that. If you want to try a weird configuration or like Peter's T6, I think that thing was so cool.
It flew amazing.
It flew really, really
well.
It
really was awesome. And, you know, I think it had a lot of benefits over the Hex,
mm-hmm.
the standard Hex, because, you know, the way the T6 is, you lose a little bit of efficiency. You know, T6, in case anyone doesn't know, is a T-copter, which is virtually a T. But instead of having one motor on each side, it has two motors.
One on the top and one on the bottom.
So basically as a hexacopter, you lose a little bit of efficiency because one motor is blowing through the other motor. But the neat thing about that is you do have a level of redundancy. So say you lose one motor, you can still oftentimes bring it down in one piece. But you can have a gimbal on it and there's no booms in the shot, which mm-hmm. is wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. And then one of the other things too we're really excited about is bringing you detailed build videos from start to finish. similar to our scratch-built airplanes.
Yeah.
So the swappables will have a start to finish. It even shows things like how to install servos. A lot of our multi-rotors in the past, we just show how to build the frame.
And that's pretty easy. Anyone can do that.
Yeah, and we got a lot of good feedback. So, you know, I get people all the time asking me questions. How do you, you know, what do you solder to what, and how do you connect everything, and which way should the props be spinning? And we're going to be, you know, bringing that to you guys and showing you how to do detailed build videos on everything.
Can I plug who's helping us with that?
Maybe next time.
Okay, we'll plug it next time. We're gonna do some more testing.
It's not for sure.
Right.
We have a wonderful person that's gonna hopefully help us make this a reality and make life a lot easier.
But yeah, in reality, I mean the kind of the tricky part is the electronics and is getting all that aligned and getting all that started right. So I think that is something that's been a long time in coming. Yeah. Is all the way start to be, you know, from where you receive the package to where you have the finished product where you're flying it.
Well, and our goal is that these videos, by going to the electronics line, you could build whatever multi-rotor, you could scratch build your own, but take the principles learned by hooking things up and then adapt that into it and still get off the ground.
Yeah, and I always tell people, just based on my experience, I feel that there's three main learning curves, and there's learning how to build a multi-copter, learning how to dial it in and tune it and get it to perform properly, and then after all that, you have to learn how to fly it. And actually, Brian actually right now is editing an episode we shot the other day, and it's just one single episode, but we wanted to just kind of put it out there on the internet for everybody to see on how to fly a multi-rotor. Just as simple as, you know, this stick does this, and this stick does that. Obviously, we fly mode 2, so it's kind of, you have to fly mode 2, but just basically give you the general rundown on what's going on when you see somebody flying a multi-rotor.
Yeah.
And then let us know if that's something you want to see too. I know we did the RC beginner series for fixed wing. Maybe eventually we could do a multi-rotor beginner series.
I could see.
We've talked about it.
I could see that being wonderful. And one thing as far as beginner series goes, multi-rotor frames are always changing. The orientation. Maybe, you know, now would probably be a good time to talk about different frame setups and stuff. But before we leave the rotor bones comment, we are working on a more durable tough tilt. So hopefully in about 4 weeks.
Tilt mechanism for the tricopter.
Yeah. Our previous 13370 tilt, it's good. It's beautiful. But the problem is because the motor hangs off the back end, if you have a tail hit, and that's very common with tricopters, there's a good chance you could break that G10 piece.
Mm-hmm. And also or the Delrin.
Yeah. And we, like, going back to it, we don't want you guys to break parts. If something breaks, we want it to be wooden booms or common items. Oh, yes. That's my beautiful bride again.
I really
hope it's
the last time.
There you go, love. But that's something that we've seen far too often, and we don't want people to have to spend money on replacement parts for us. We want them to put a new boom on and go have fun again.
Yeah.
So we have a solution for that, and we've been working hard. Alex, you've been amazing.
Mm-hmm. And we've been 3D printing prototypes and
like crazy.
And it's coming out pretty cool. It's going to be very different from all of our other products.
Yes. And matter of fact, we're going to I want to take a small tricopter to Europe with us when we do the Europe meetup and do some testing out there. But I'm so excited to see where this is coming. And hopefully once we know it's good, about 4 weeks we'll have it in production and have it on the store.
Mm-hmm. It's a good idea to bring it to Europe.
Yeah, by the way, cheaper too.
Yes, very cheap.
All right, well, moving on.
That just kind of goes back. I mean, just our theme for the Rotor Bros line is simple, affordable, and more durable.
Yeah.
So if we're always going that direction, just like we are with the tilt, then I think we're on the right track.
And guys, please keep letting us know what you want to see, new configurations, what would help you learn and get into the hobby, you know, bring joy to the hobby for you. We listen. All right, you're turning a knob. That scares me.
Sorry. I heard more mouth noises. This new audio system is...
Yeah, we're going to be a little distracted with this.
You really hear everything.
All right, so frames, though. We've done a lot of experimenting with frames.
Yeah, I've been testing out as many frames as I can, because when I first started, I flew a lot of anycopters, a lot of bat bones, a lot of tricopters, and they're all great, but I wanted to say, you know, those were the first and only multi-rotors I flew, so started getting into things like the TBS Discovery and the Blackouts, and lately there's just been a fleet of mini quads around the shop. Actually, one just came in the mail today from Simplecopter.
Yeah.
If you haven't checked out Simplecopter, definitely do that. He's an excellent pilot.
Oh, he's amazing.
We saw him flying at CEF.
He did quite a demo, didn't he?
Yeah, he does really some really crazy line of sight flying, aerobatics and stuff, and he has his tricopters and stuff dialed really, really well.
Yeah, yeah. He uses a lot of T-copters, not tricopters, but T-copters.
Exactly, and yeah.
That configuration is amazing for aerobatics because mm-hmm. it rotates on an axis. It's kind of like a plus without the front part of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, he can roll that thing like crazy.
Yep.
What's your favorite kind of frame?
Honestly, lately it's been the H-quad, any kind of H-quad, specifically like a, like almost a dead cat.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I really like the blackout, but just H-quads in general, I do like the quad. I know a lot of people like the tricopters because of the yaw and it feels a little bit different. Personally, I kind of like the way a quadcopter yaws a little bit better, and also it's just, it's simpler. It's I don't know, more predictable, I guess.
You can dial them in very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And especially with the way these boards are going, it's amazing. But and I agree with you, too. The H-quads are great. And now it seems like with the dead cat configuration or how they're kind of spread out on both ends,
mm-hmm.
it seems like most of the 250-size quads that we're dealing with have that fit configuration. That way you have the benefit of having the GoPro kind of projected forward a little bit more. And they fly fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, even on the like the Blackout and the X-Hover and a couple of the other mini quads that we have, you don't really see any of the props. Occasionally, if your GoPro is a little cockeyed, which sometimes mine is, you'll see a tip of a prop in a corner of the screen, but it's normally pretty well. We actually, the main thing that I've learned, because we've dealt, what do we have so far? We have the Blackouts, we've tried the X-Hover.
Bamboo quad.
Bamboo, the Boomerang from Bamboo Boomerang. Copter. Simple Copter just sent us that crazy V-tail racing quad.
And then Kurt Barrett from, I think it's his login or his name is Triforce. Does that sound right?
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, boy, I hope I got that right.
What's that quad called? The
I thought it was the Venom or something.
Diamondback.
Diamondback, yeah.
He has awesome. And this is a local friend of ours who's making his own frames, and he does amazing work. He draws them up, and he blessed us with one mini racer, and we're getting that ready to go. We flew it, but not with the GoPro yet.
Yeah.
And we love it. This has definitely been an amazing part
also,
of this
year. Also, Lumineer.
Lumineer, yeah.
We just got the QAV 250 in the mail the other day.
Carbon fiber props are gorgeous.
Yeah, until I...
We had a little mishap. We got a little...
I guess we should just be happy we didn't die because the quad tried to kill us, specifically me, and it was my fault. So, needless to say, I'll be ordering more carbon fiber props for that.
We'll make it right. You know, we're not going to do what we did last time where David went up and popped a couple rolls and crashed it and dum-dummed it, and then we put some cheap props on. We're going to put carbon fiber back on and try it.
Yeah. So, anyways, the main thing I've learned from trying out all these frames, because they all are spectacular. They fly really, really well. The main common denominator between all of them is the electronics. They're all using a very, very similar setup. Normally a 2200 to 2400 kV motor, a 5.3 props, Simon K 10 amp speed controls, and we've been using just the multi. We flip 1.5, and honestly, I love that board.
$15.
I don't care. I don't care what board you like or how, you know, if it's not $15 and it doesn't fly that good, I'm not really that interested because I have to really try hard to get a KK2 dialed in as well as that $15.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about getting it from Ready to Fly Quads is you can get it for a quad or a hex.
And it's pre-flashed.
I think you can even get a tricopter. I could be wrong.
He's also coming out with some spider quad files too, if he mm-hmm. doesn't already have it. So that's exciting because you lose that. And as far as interfacing with the computer, you've done that a few times and flashed some updated files. It's pretty mm-hmm. easy, isn't it?
Yeah. And I downloaded the spider hex. And
nice.
It took a little bit. There's a little bit of a learning curve. I'm not a PC guy,
or a
programmer, so it took. I'm a low maintenance kind of guy when it comes to dialing in. The easier the better for me. So $15 plug and play, you can't beat it.
No, you can't. I'm recently falling in love with again the 3DR Robotics APM.
Mm-hmm.
When we did the ElectroHub episode, I downloaded their most current. It's open source, so you're always getting like new firmware available. Mm-hmm. And it's always getting better, but they have a wizard on it now
mm-hmm.
where you just click on this one or you download Mission Planner, you click the wizard, and it just drives you through everything. And this most recent file was amazing because one of our hardest things with programming that is getting the compass right.
Yeah.
It's so crucial on the APM to get the compass proper. And the new system was amazing. It wouldn't just give you the 60 seconds and the timeout. It would have you constantly do it, and it gave you a graphic where it'd see how many packets of information it was getting reliably. So if you saw, okay, I'm getting it now, you could kind of focus more and more. And when we put this thing together, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And it's finally fallen into where it's every bit as easy as DJI NASA. And we put it on the Spider Hub.
I've never actually programmed a DJI NASA.
I don't have a good taste in my mouth about NASA. I bought one of my own system a long time ago, and I didn't have their Opto ESCs.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried Plush 30s, didn't work. Then I tried Red Brick, didn't work. And I was just pulling my hair out because it's like for everything to work, you had to really get pigeonholed into their products or a set amount.
Oh, really?
I never knew that. Yeah, it wouldn't work on certain. There's a whole chart on RC groups where the guy had it pre-made, and you could go down and see, okay, this would work, this wouldn't work, what you had to do to change it. Where when I put it into APM, it just simply worked. And they already knew, okay, if it's a red brick, you got to calibrate it this way. And it was already there. There's a great support system.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was already $150 cheaper, plus waypoints, plus all those other great features, I'm going to upset a lot of people, but I just don't think DJI is worth the money.
Yeah. Well, the speaking of wizards, the Lumineer little QAV250 came with a CC3D board, which is OpenPilot.
Oh, nice.
And obviously I had to dial it in because I thought it was plug and play, and I plugged it in and it almost killed us.
Well,
and broke those nice props.
The thing is so beautiful. I don't blame you for being eager. I mean, it was so gorgeous in the case
with those props on it too.
We were just eager to fly it.
I have to say, is it? Beautiful presentation of the quad. I mean, you open it up, you feel like you're opening up an Apple.
It has an amazing carrying case, too.
Yeah.
That's Get FPV and the guys at Lumineer. They really do a really good job, and they have everything you need for FPV. What was I talking about? Oh, the Wizard. I did get it flying, and I didn't like the settings, so I went back, and the Wizard for OpenPilot is actually really good. Yeah, compared to, like, the multi-Wii, it comes set up perfectly, especially if you get it from Ready to Fly Quads. They don't even have a wizard. It's just you have to know how to program an Arduino board.
Cheap as that is, we should just go ahead and do a quick tip video because I think a lot of people are going to use multi-Wii in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And just show them how to do it.
And I like that, the more quads and that sort of thing we've been trying, the more multi-roads we've been trying, the more boards we've been seeing.
Yeah,
and I really like that there's such a nice variety of boards now, because I really do think that, I mean, just naturally in the market, the more boards there are to choose from, the more competition there's going to be, which means the better people are going to have to make them.
Yeah.
You know, and that includes the software, that includes the wizards, that includes the performance. Just the more there are, naturally, the mm-hmm. better they're going to be. And so,
who would have dreamed 3 years ago you're paying $150 for something that would just fly it?
Yeah.
Not fly it well, but just fly it. And now it's just amazing.
It goes pretty quick.
And that's $15.
And that's part of the trouble with a multi-rotor beginner series as, you
technology
know...
Technology changes.
Exactly. I mean, it's obviously very time-consuming and very expensive to make something like that. But also, just how far in the last year...
1 year.
...that technology has come. You know, it'd be a shame to make that tutorial and then it be, you know, at least the programming side of it, things, it be obsolete.
Yeah.
And that's the key difference between, you know, with an airplane beginner series, an airplane is an airplane.
Right.
You know, the controls do the same thing, but with a multi-rotor, different configurations give you different characteristics, and you're really designing the machine for what you want to do. If you want racing, you design one kind of machine. And, you know, that's probably a good thing to talk about, too, is, you know, we're talking about quad racing. Well, those little micro 250 size quads are exceptional, but putting it up to get aerial, you know, air to air, so what would you recommend, Alex?
I've been using the mini quads.
Yeah,
honestly.
But doesn't the Discovery
mm-hmm.
work a little bit better in some applications, right?
Well, it just depends on what you're trying to do. It depends on the speed of the aircraft you're chasing, how long you want to fly, because the mini quads typically don't fly very long, maybe 7 minutes, 8 minutes tops. If you're really, I mean, depending on how heavy your throttle thumb is. But yeah, it just depends on what you're looking to do. And the tricopter is good for certain things. And mm-hmm. then you get into gimbals and whether or not to use a gimbal. And there's tons of different factors. It's different for every person. Actually, Eric Monroe's here right now working on his Hex, which is huge.
It's huge.
Huge compared to what we're used to. And he was joking around saying, My multi-rotors keep getting bigger and bigger, and your guys just keep getting smaller and smaller.
We're not kidding you. His prop has a bigger diameter than our
Black
quads.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so anyways, going back to control boards, me personally, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a programmer. Actually, I prefer not to fool around with PIDs and all that stuff. I'm a plug-and-play kind of guy. And even with multi-Wii, if you can just learn, and when you talk about an episode or a video to show how, basically what you do is you download what's called a sketch file. And a sketch file is pre-set up, basically file, like we got ours from Paul at Ready to Fly Quads. So you don't have to go in and plug it in, guess at some numbers, and then go see what happens when you fly it, and then keep tuning and going back and forth. You can go find somebody who already has it figured out and just share their sketch file. So maybe we will have to do a video good, like that. Also, the Open Pilot, I've dealt with it very little so far, but I'm interested. It's got me hooked. I want to learn more about it, see what it's capable of, because some of the videos I see, the FPV videos that people post for the CC3D board, and then what's the other one, the NAS32, looks like they perform really, really well.
Solid.
And they're about half the size of a KK2 board, too.
Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
I learned something with the APM for dialing in. They do have a new feature on it where it auto-dials. And all you need to do is get this thing up in the air, make sure your props are balanced. And that's one thing is, before you change any settings on any of these boards, think it needs to be dialed in, make sure all the vibration's gone.
Mm-hmm.
If you have vibration issues and the thing seems like it's twitchy, it could just simply be the thing's dialed in perfectly, but the vibrations are causing it to be twitchy.
Yep.
And the new gyros are doing much better and getting all that taken care of, but you can't replace a well-dialed-in, well-balanced prop machine. It just cuts all the work out rather than tweaking and changing things, and it never gets better. Oftentimes people say, I can't get this thing dialed in, and they lift it up and it's, you know, that was a pretty good noise, wasn't it?
That was good. Good sound effects.
But,
nice Foley artist.
Yeah, but with the APM has an auto dial feature, which is pretty cool. You just put an altitude hold and flip it, and it'll just pulsate one way or another. And then after it lands, Kurt's done this. Our friend Kurt, he loves it. But what I do is I'll turn channel 6, which is a variable knob, and I'll go in and I'll go into stable KP. And I'll assign channel 6 for that, and I'll just lift it up, and I'll turn it until I'm happy. And then when I land it, and I link up, and you can link up through Bluetooth, or you can link up through your 3DR. There's lots of different ways, but I just use the computer. I look at the value, and I lock it in, and then I go to loiter, and I turn that knob until I'm happy with the loiter characteristics, and I just go through it. It's very, very simple now. And I think there's a theme kind of going along with all these boards where they're kind of getting their common language, common setups.
Mm-hmm.
Once that happens, it's going to be very, very nice across the board because people will adopt that.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same.
Yeah. And I have a feeling, too, that one day they'll have boards. I think there will always be some element of customization available. Mm-hmm. But eventually, I have a feeling you just plug in your stuff and the board is able to recognize, you know, what KV, what props, kind of what battery you have plugged in, and just kind of come up with a generic.
The telemetry they have now built into ESCs coming out is just amazing. I mean, where it can tell you the temperatures, the width, and it's actively braking rather than just slowing down. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm saying that word a lot.
It is amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And multi-rotors is definitely evolving the quickest as far as, you know, mm-hmm. airframes goes. I know helis have flybarless technology, but what they're doing now to dial things in and to give you different characteristics and different responses, it's definitely growing the fastest.
Yeah, coming a long way.
It's a very soothing podcast because you can hear the rain in the headphones.
I know. It feels so echoey. I don't know. This is like sensory overload.
I think you're just overanalyzing.
That might be it. But the raindrops I'm looking outside are like the size of quarters, so that could be it.
Yeah,
wow.
It could be the problem.
Hope my windows are up.
Yeah.
All right, so control boards. Do you want to talk about anything else multi-rotor?
We have a couple multi-rotor related voicemails.
Why don't we listen to them?
I think we should. All right, the first one's from Jack.
Hi, Flight Test. This is Jack in Australia. I've been flying a quadcopter for about 2 weeks, so I'm still very much a novice. I noticed that your comments on the Blackout Mini Quad and the TBS Discovery is that they feel locked in. In your opinion, what is it that makes them so locked in and so stable? Is it the weight or the size or the materials, or is it the electronic system or the high KV motors and the smaller diameter props perhaps? I'd be interested in your experience view, as it may help those of us with clunky home-built quadcopters make them fly better. I love the videos and the podcast. You guys are doing a great job. Thanks.
So what is a locked-in quadcopter, and how do you get it there? What does that mean, and how do you get it there?
In my opinion, but do you want me to go first or second?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, I definitely think weight has something to do with it, and this is kind of counterproductive, but the TBS Discovery is pretty heavy.
It's extremely heavy.
And for the size of a 250, you know, carrying all that equipment, it's pretty heavy too.
Yeah.
I've had where I've had very light multi-rotors, and when the RPM changes, the RPM change to the performance, such as the thrust produced, it's just way out of whack. And what happens is you get a multi-rotor that can you know, with a few RPMs difference, change the effects greatly. Mm-hmm. I think these heavier multi-rotors give you a larger threshold of resolution, I should say, on the motors.
Yeah, and even like my tricopter, the tricopter itself is really lightweight, even with a GoPro on it, but we use a 4-cell 3000 battery, which is pretty very substantial. And the TBS Discovery is even heavier than that because it's got a heavier frame. Yeah, I think there may be some truth to that. Maybe, I don't know if it's necessarily better, but it is different. Having a heavier quad
carries its energy
along with the electronics to be able to power that and carry it around. Yeah, it carries it. It cuts a little bit better. Carries its momentum. And the thing, I guess, you know, what do you consider something that's locked in? For me, when I first first flew some of these mini quads, especially with the multi-Wii board, you just get super comfortable and you find yourself trying things that you haven't ever tried before, because you never felt comfortable. It makes you feel really comfortable, basically. That's my opinion of what locked in feels. It's not necessarily performs a certain way, because you could have really aerobatic quads that are locked in and then real docile, you know, kind of nicely tracking quads that I consider locked in as well. So,
well, and like what you said, I almost think the definition locked in is a multi-rotor you can trust. It's something you feel comfortable. That's okay. It's
predictable.
Predictable. And we fly an acro mode a lot. I have stable mode on my spider quad through the APM, but I don't use it as much as I use acro mode.
Yeah, full manual mode. Actually, I don't know what it is with my brain, but I can't fly in like a state auto, like a Addy mode.
Yeah, it's kind of like the multi-rotor version of head hold, you know, where it always goes back to a certain heading. And that's wonderful for beginners. And loiters and GPS lock, you know, they have different terminologies. That's fantastic for beginners. But you encourage people to get out of that as quickly as possible because...
Yeah, just from my personal experience, I got so frustrated trying to dial in the auto level on my KK2 board that I just gave up and just started learning. And it took longer, but it worked out the better because now I can fly anything. You're not limited to only things that have auto level.
And where stable mode and GPS lock really handicap you is in throttle management, because those modes automatically sometimes dial in your throttle, so you're holding the same heading and things like that. It really can weaken you in throttle management, but also counter moves where people say, okay, yeah, I want to level out, they just let go of the sticks.
Yeah, I heard you and Eric talking about the DJI Phantom earlier, and I didn't realize that the Phantom's transmitter has a center stick, and when you let go of the stick, it goes back to the center position.
It's considered an elevation stick almost. Like, you know, if you pull it down. And I don't like that. And I know that sounds really... I don't normally say I don't like things, but what happens is, a normal multi-rotor will hover around mid-stick. Mm-hmm. But what it's dialing in is when you push forward, it's automatically giving you increased throttle. You know, and those kind of things are really good. If you can teach your thumbs to do that for you, you have so much more opportunity. And I feel like when Phantom has that kind of technology, and also Parrot Drone, you know, they have the similar thing with their, what's it called, the Sky Controller?
Yeah,
Sky Controller. And it's an awesome controller. It feels really comfortable. But when you have that, it's great for people just to get in the air very quickly. But they quickly disconnect in their brain what the throttle actually does.
Yeah, it's not. It's almost like you're not flying. It's just like you're kind of giving it commands.
You're guiding it.
And a lot of people think part of the reason for that is a lot of people buying DJI Phantoms, Bebop Drone, that sort of thing. A lot of those people are they're accessing a huge demographic of people that aren't hobbyists.
Yeah.
People that want to put a camera up in the sky.
And for that, I applaud them. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Right, and they are making something more accessible for that. But for what I think they are probably doing those people a disservice for if they reverse engineer getting into the hobby, you know, just want to put a camera in the sky, but then say, hey, this whole flying something in the air is pretty cool, then they start to get into more advanced stuff. Yeah. I think they've probably done themselves a disservice by learning that way. But
and I'd encourage people to, you know, once they get into that and want to learn, by learning what the throttle actually does, it just opens up your options. It's actually cheaper because if you lock yourself into a Phantom, then you're always buying Phantom-like products, which are always a lot more expensive than getting to build your own. And there's so much joy in saying, you know what, I want this multi-rotor to lift this or do this or fly like this.
Yeah.
You can't build something like that when you don't understand how to fly it properly.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I kind of attack it. But it's not like a negative thing. It's just...
It's just not for us. It's not a hobby. It's not a hobby product, I don't think.
It creates an unnecessary hurdle to jump over.
Mm-hmm.
So what's some quick tips for people to, quote-unquote, lock in their home-built multi-rotors if they're just getting started? What's some quick things they can check over?
First thing is get rid of vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah, vibration's bad. Also,
Balance your props and motors. Mm-hmm. Anything that moves, you want to make sure it's balanced.
Yeah, and you can run them up. You run them up individually. It's very hard, and you have a lot of whirling blades. But dynamically balancing your props where it's on the motor, you know, you hold your system down in one motor at a time. And Alex, do you want to step them through how to do that?
Well, it's different with every board, but normally what I do is I just power up one motor at a time, one ESC. Plug one ESC at a time in, and have the prop mounted to your motor. Make sure you hold it down, or even secure it down, chain it down, do something. You got to be real safe, real careful.
Have a friend, you know, maybe holding it down with their hands clear. And if you only have to worry about one motor running up, this is where it gets dangerous. Maybe even wear a pair of leather gloves.
Yeah, and you can't stress safety enough, because it doesn't seem like a big deal, and it seems like, you know, it's a fun toy or whatever. Yeah. But you can seriously hurt yourself. And when that Lumineer quad sprung to life the other day,
you were lucky.
That was scary. Yeah. Really.
Honestly, man, if that didn't have the battery loose from it, you know, the battery is what caused it to kick over. The fact that it was loose, that would have went straight into your face.
There's
plenty of pictures online that show what happens when a multi-rotor gets away from you.
Yeah.
Taking off props and that sort of thing.
So, anyways, you hold your copter down, run up the motors, do slow throttle increases, and go through all the different frequencies of rotation of the props. Make sure there's no vibrations. Use tape, use hot glue. There's an episode on it that you can watch.
I'll link to that in the show notes.
And that's the main thing. Then once you do that, you want to make sure you're keep adjusting your, if you're using a KK2 or any kind of board, your PIDs, keep fiddling with those until it becomes really, really locked in. Or if you can go to like someplace like Ready to Fly Quads, get something that's pre-flashed that is proven and you know it works.
And just so you know, your P's out of the PIDs, your P's is basically your gain. That's the most important one. I can never still properly address what each one does, but the P is what brings you the most results and kind of where you have the most problems. Also rigid frame, too. If your frame is spongy, like we were looking at the Discovery, those arms are very, very bendy.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that has to do with the weight. It's so heavy. Those arms are actually pretty rigid for a basic setup, but that's a pretty heavy setup.
Yeah, they take the flame wheel arms.
Yeah, and they're also big motors too, and they kind of torque a little bit. Yeah. So do the wooden booms that we use. It just depends on what kind of setup you're using. If you get into heavier stuff, you may want to upgrade to like carbon fiber or aluminum.
If you see your arms moving heavily and wiggling back and forth, don't use them. Try to find a way to.
Yeah, another thing is too, depending on the motor and your motor mounts, the distance between the props and your booms on your copter, if it's too close or if there's too much surface area below your props, it can cause vibrations.
Yeah.
So if you can't get your props balanced out, that could be why. Check your distance from your boom, how much surface area your boom is actually taking up of underneath your props.
So if you had half-inch booms and your prop was a quarter-inch above it, you have problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, it claps.
Okay, well, let's move into another voicemail here.
That was not a lightning round.
Well, I don't think the goal is to we're just answering multi-rotor questions. Let's do it.
Hey, Flight Test. This is Josh from Florida, and I was wondering when you're going to do a multi-rotor beginner series. I know I would like one, and I'm sure a lot of other people would also. Thanks. Bye.
We hear you, Josh. By the way, we love your name.
Just great. Yeah, really well-rounded.
Thank you for being part of family. coming out today.
No.
Well, the first part.
Oh, is that coming out today?
Yeah, it's Brian's editing it right now.
So basically, we're doing an episode that Alex mentioned earlier, which is how to fly your multi-rotor.
It primarily deals with flying, learning how to fly. But going back to what I said, that there's three different learning curves: building, tuning, and then flying. So maybe we can do some basic. Mm-hmm. The tough thing is with the other ones is that the technology is always changing.
Yeah.
I guess we could just do a real basic general setup.
Yeah. Well, and the build videos are going to definitely address the building aspect. And
that's true.
It's actually better, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you recommend with people going into nanos, mm-hmm. learning how a proper quad should fly, and especially when it's a nano that costs under $80.
Yeah.
That
$90 is a pretty cheap price to pay to learn.
Yeah. And that way, when you are learning, you're learning on a multi-rotor that is tuned in properly. Those things are tuned in exceptionally well.
Yes.
And so, this is how a good multi-rotor feels. When you go to build one, now you have a standard, that you can set everything against, mm-hmm. saying, okay, it doesn't fly like the nano, and you just keep on dialing it in until it feels like the nano.
Yeah.
Now, nano does have auto level on it, which is not too inhibitive, but it's good for beginners.
Yeah, it'll get you going in the right direction.
So I guess this answers the question. We just haven't forgot about it. It's just... Yeah. It's more complicated than whether or not we've just done it or not.
I think the build videos will definitely have a beginner series feel to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll definitely help.
Hi, my name is Nathan from California, Northern California. I'm the Nate Dog with a zero in the forums. And I just had a quick question first. Thanks for the show, man. It's so awesome. I love it. It's nice to have some clean entertainment. But I know a lot of times you talk about these planes you're working on. It'd be nice to see... maybe something, an episode maybe about, how you go about design, and maybe throw in some, basic, here's the kind of ratios and simple math, you need to do when you're, working on a new plane. So anyways, love you guys. Keep it up.
That was not about a multi-rotor.
We love you, Nate Dog, with a zero. Thank you.
It's a good question.
We actually started on this when we have bad weather, and I think we need to finish
it. We didn't really start on it, but we talked about starting
on
it.
we have content we can use.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
We actually, back during the winter, mm-hmm. we were getting so sick of doing micros and indoor planes and indoor shoots. We wanted to do something a little bit different. We came up with the idea to do a how to design your own plane kind of series. Two or three episodes maybe. Never got around to it because the nice weather came, but I definitely think it'll be something that we revisit, whether it's before next winter or not. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I think it'd be something good to visit sooner or later. Designing mm-hmm. your planes and building it is one of the greatest parts of this hobby. And,
yeah.
All the free plans out there and the free resources are great, but if so many people have different ideas on flight, the best thing to do is just do it, build it, and then see if it flies. And you learn really, really quickly from that. But, there are proportions and certain things to think about. I know I get people mad when I say, if you can balance it, you can fly it. But, the flying sock of the 1980s does not lie.
Fair enough.
Hey, Flight Test. This is Andy from Germana Community College in Fredericksburg, Virginia. The engineering students and I here are building a tetradecacopter for an upcoming competition. Obviously, I don't have to tell you, but that's a 14-rotor multicopter. We've got it set up as a hex with two rotors per channel and two additional rotors in the center running full blast. My question is this. We're using DT750 motors, and we're having a lot of trouble with the mounting for them. It seems like if the set screws are put in too loose, you get really horrible vibration from the motor. If you threadlock them in place, they still come loose a lot. If you make them too tight, then they... cause the motor to bind up and generate a lot of internal friction. So how do you mount your DT750 motors, and do you have any other tips for working with them? Thanks a lot. Bye.
I did one thing, and maybe it'll make some people cringe. Take a file or a Dremel, and where the mounting hole is going to be, grind a little flat spot. I know they have like a little recessed ring around there, but grind a spot that's flat, and you don't have to go too far. But by making it flat, you're pushing against a larger surface, which is also going to keep the rotation of that set screw from happening as easily. And, of course, using I know blue is something you can release. Use the blue Loctite really well. But I know just grinding a little bit of an edge on that. Most of them should also have two set screws. Make sure you use both those set screws. Sometimes I've seen from Hobby King where one set screw is there, the other set screw is not there, but there's a hole for it. That's a common wheel collar set screw. Do the same grindy thing on both sides and see if that works.
Yeah, Sounds
wow,
good.
Tetradecacopter. That's yeah. insane.
Yeah, the question aside, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, gotta go back to the big picture there. Yeah, wow.
Definitely.
Fly a puppy in that.
All right, next question is from Jake.
Hello, flight test. This is Jake from Washington. I'm like 14. Anyway, I was wondering if you guys were going to make any non-allied warbirds, because that's kind of what E-Flight does, and it's incredibly annoying, because Focke-Wulf 109s are kind of awesome looking. I saw that J7W or whatever it's called in the background, so thanks for that. Also, do you guys have any plans to make radial engine fighters? I know that'd be kind of tricky, but I'm just interested to see what you guys think. Anyway, thanks. Love you guys. That sums it up pretty well, I think.
Love you, Jake.
Yeah. Hey, good eyes in the background, too. Yes. We are...
He's a true warbird fanatic.
Yes. And I got to apologize, too. We wanted three consecutive warbirds in a month, and that laser fire hurt us in many, many ways.
Plus 20 million other things that we have going on.
Yeah.
We shouldn't make excuses, but we do apologize. We really, maybe next year will be the year of the warbird campaign. We do still have some warbirds coming out. Actually, yeah. You've been working on one, and it's not an allied.
No, it's the Storch. Mm-hmm.
It's not. Oh, you just gave it away. So I guess I can say it's not necessarily a fighter.
No.
But
no,
it is a war bird. It's a bird of war.
Yeah. Well, and it was a primary trainer. I've been talking about how I have a design for a FT trainer, and it was very similar to the Fisher Storch. And mm-hmm. I'm sorry, did I just throw it out of the bag too quickly?
That's all right. No, it's your plane.
I can't take it back now.
It's your plane.
So, yeah, what people saw in the background of the Kraken build
was not a cub.
Was not a super cub.
You were wrong. It's okay, though. We still love you.
It's a fun Storch.
It was a fun Storch. And the reason we're saying fun is because I wanted to exaggerate things and features to give it the best similarities to a fun cub characteristic trainer wise and also performance wise and that prototype that was in the background was a ball of fly.
It was fun.
Absolutely hysterical.
The adverse, it has quite a bit of adverse. Yeah. Y'all,
the spacing on the control horns are going to be spaced as such to give us the differential, so even if you don't have a computer radio, because the ailerons are so far out, this is not a plane that you're going to do tight rolling circles with. It's going to be trainerish, but it's a blast. Mm-hmm. So we're going to dial in the differential through the control horns. We get the flaps working, play with some wing slats, but prototype flew well. But to be honest, the Fisher Storch has an amazing front nose on it where it's actually like a triangle. Mm-hmm. And that was because the V8 was upside down. Well, to do that in foam, what you're doing is you're messing with the geometry where the swappable pod would go.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that very much. And also, by making that mold there, you're causing a weak spot with the foam board and some design issues. So I'm calling it the Fun Storch because I'm going to have profile being pretty accurate, but I'm going to take some liberties to make it easy to build and keep the performance in mind heavier than the scales.
Well, I think that kind of happens with all of our designs.
Yeah, you look at the Spitfire and the Mustang. I mean,
Spitfire, yeah. Well, if you design them exactly to scale, they actually turn out looking kind
of
weird.
Well, that was one of the first things we were talking previous to this with the design series. We took three views of the Mustang and drew it, and the wings on the Mustang are about 15% bigger. The tail surfaces are 20% bigger. And the fuselage is a little bit squattier. Reason being is if we would have kept the proportions of the fuselage to the wings would have been much, much shorter and smaller and narrow. Mm-hmm. And anytime you increase the size of the wings, you quadruple the lift. But when you decrease it, you get the adverse effect. Mm-hmm. So those are some key things. But, we kind of switched things up. I wanted that FT trainer to come out. I thought it's a perfect time. It's a warbird. And that Storch is so cool. So we'll hopefully get that out next. Also, the P-82. Which I know is a allied, not the Axis, but mm-hmm. we'll see if we can squeeze it in before and make our promise right before Flight Fest.
Yeah, and the Germans captured a couple allied planes, so you can just give it a non-allied paint scheme, and there you go.
Just change the tail of the Mustang, and you have a MiG 3. Is that correct?
Which MiG was that? I think it was a MiG.
Yeah.
Or the BF-109.
Yeah, on the Spitfire.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's not too much different.
All right, well, let's hop over to the next question.
Hey, Flight Test. Alec here from Portola Valley, California. I had a question about Spectrum receivers. What is the difference between their park fly receivers and their full range receivers? And what are the best applications for each? I also just wanted to thank you guys for all that you do for the RC community. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you, brother.
Well, okay. Good question.
Well, park flyers and 4-inch. Well, first of all, the antennas usually on 4-inch are much longer. Mm-hmm. Usually on spectrum has diversity involved, which means, you know, you'll have a satellite receiver or it'll have two antennas opposing directions.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important if you have two antennas on your receiver, make them 90 degrees from each other to get the best performance.
Yeah.
Whether it's flat and vertical, I like one point towards the wingtip and one point in, straight up. That seems to be a really good, you know, solution, or one towards the tail and one straight up. But just keep in mind that the tip of that antenna is like a donut with the hole being in the center. So if you're pointing your antenna exactly, your transmitter antenna exactly at your receiver antenna, you're giving it actually the very worst reception it can possibly get. So keep that in mind. Honestly, the price of full range versus park flyer now, I think it's $29 is the very cheapest full range you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Just go full range as much as possible.
Yeah.
Those stubby little antennas, you know, cut down your range significantly. Always do, if you're unsure and maintaining something,
yeah,
try to do a range check. We have that in the beginner series where we mm-hmm. talk about that. That's really important. But it just comes down to range. And, you know, if you have a simple foam plane that you're flying in the backyard or at a baseball diamond, park flyer is fine. If you have a sail plane, something that can catch a thermal, or an FPV ship, you definitely want full range.
Yep.
All right.
By the way, speaking of sail planes, I flew that micro radiant over the weekend.
You like it?
Yeah.
Burned about 50 batteries.
That thing is amazing, isn't it?
That's a lot of fun.
Speaking of range, that's pretty respectable because we've gotten some pretty good height out of that thing, and
yeah.
It's so tiny.
It was really tiny. No, I had it at my dad's place, and I was thermaling up, and it was literally a speck. I would do a steep dive.
Diving those things is so much fun.
I did a steep dive for about, I would say about 15 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Just, because I could barely see
you
it.
You can't fold the wings.
I've tried so hard to fold the wings, and they won't fold.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with that, but yeah, it was a blast. Sorry, that was just a random anecdote.
That's okay.
Sorry, I gave my dad my mini radian that I had.
Oh, dear.
For
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. For Father's Day. We just shot an episode on the Carbon Cub, so
yeah.
Stay tuned for that. I know we're a little late. It's not necessarily a new product anymore, but my dad was nice. We had one. My dad was nice enough to let us use his.
And then Bob Parmley
came out, and Bob crashed his, and then Peter was there at that shoot too, and he crashed my dad's.
So the one that we actually came back with was ours, but both the other ones crashed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Not a great day at the field, but
no.
Hopefully we got a good episode.
Yeah. We're going to make it right with my dad. So.
Yeah. Your dad's awesome.
All right, next question.
Hey guys, Frank from Olympia, Washington here. I have a question for you about ground control stations. A lot of the projects I see on the interwebs have a row of power switches, and from what I can tell, there's a power switch for each individual subcomponent of the system, so like the transmitter, the screen, etc. And I'm curious as to why you would need to have one switch for each component as opposed to having one master switch that control power for the whole system. You need the components to be turned on in a specific order, or does there need to be a delay between flipping the power on? Inquiring minds want to know. So anyway, thanks for your help, and keep up the great work. Your podcasts always keep my commute entertaining. Take care.
Thanks, brother. Can you recap that?
He's asking basically on an FPV ground station that he seems, you know, on builds in the internet that there's a
switch on everything.
There's a switch on literally everything. He's asking why can't there just be a master switch, you know, that turns on everything at once.
I think it's because everything's kind of individually designed and then you incorporate all things together.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I do notice is like on your actual machine, powering on the GoPro and then the video transmitter. In that order, oftentimes makes things work friendlier. For some reason, I've had where I've left my GoPro off and I turned it on, and it's not framed right in the picture, or there's some weird things with OSD. And this is mostly with the airplanes, but that's something I've noticed is powering your video, you know, camera on first, and video transmitter. Unless they're wired together, then obviously they power on together, and there's no problem. But as far as the TVs and the video receivers and all that stuff, I don't think there's really an issue.
Yeah,
I think it's just because they're all individually designed.
And I think that a lot of people, even if they could wire it up to power all up at once, I think enough people are just finicky about their system and just like that individual control.
Yeah. Well, one strong recommendation, if you have a voltage alarm and you're powering everything, say you have a little LCD monitor and all that stuff, put a voltage alarm on there because it'll sneak up on you. So if you have your little LCD screen and you know everything's off of your little 12-volt 2200, you want that thing chirping before it starts cutting out on you because once it starts, it's going to go downhill really quickly.
Yeah.
Good tip. Next question.
Hi, Flight Test. Jai here from Australia. And I just wanted to know, I was just getting into the RC hobby, and I've had trouble choosing a plane, and I'm wondering if you could help. If you could just, any beginner planes that you'd recommend, that and just tell us, that'd be great. Thanks. Bye.
We had an episode on that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of different options. If you want to build your own, I'm still a fan of the FT Flyer. Yeah. That's $1 sheet of foam board. Now, in Australia, I don't think they have Dollar Tree foam board, though, do they?
Mm-mm. Yeah, so, it's
tough. Ready board by Adam Classics.
Yeah, three-pack for $33. Or, yeah, check out the beginner series. We do a How to Choose Your First Plane episode. Also, there's a good one we did over the winter. I think it's called indoor beginner planes or something like that. It's good beginner slow flying indoor planes.
I definitely add the Micro Radian, and it's very high on my list.
The Micro Radian is exceptional plane. Good introduction to three channel flying. Durable. It's so lightweight that it can hold its own weight pretty well.
Can handle a respectable amount of wind. I like the fact that just with my kids playing it, they wouldn't even turn the motor on. They just do glides with it. Yeah. They just toss it.
I was doing the same thing. Yeah.
It's a ball. So the Micro Radian didn't exist back when we did that, but that's a contender.
$90 without a transmitter.
That's you need to buy a
transmitter separately.
AS3X in it too.
I left the AS3X on all day because the wind was gusting up to 10-ish knots.
Yeah.
And it flew. I mean, it was obviously windy, but it flew great, I thought.
Yeah, it actually does a pretty good job in the wind.
Okay, next question.
Hey, flight test crew. Just want to get your opinion on something. I understand that lift does not scale down very well. So, therefore, because I want everything smaller, how small do you guys think you can go with something like a Spitfire or a biplane or even a triplane? Possible to get something down to like a 5-inch wingspan, maybe, if they sell the components necessary for such a small plane? And if they did, would the lift even be enough at that size? Anyways, just want to thank you guys for everything that you do. Looking forward to Flight Fest 2014, and keep up the good work. Thanks.
You know what? Thanks, there is an amazing group of people that build planes in the sub-gram category. That's under 1 ounce. I mean, it's amazing. We've seen them at JR Indoor.
Oh, yeah, they go with the A-10.
With the A-10 Warthog, and there was another guy had a Sabre and a little P-51 Mustang. One had lights and flaps and retracts on it.
What?
Yeah, he actually got it in the magazine, too. It was absolutely exceptional, and I'd be afraid to sneeze around a thing. but, yeah, they do have the technology, the levels you have to go through. If you're building something 5-inch, you need it to be under an ounce of weight to fly at a decent speed and fly properly. And that's pretty humbling what you have to do to make that happen, but it is definitely a reality. You can do it. We don't have a lot of resources for that, but RC Groups is an amazing resource for that.
Yeah.
And so I'd strongly recommend that you Google sub ounce or you know, sub or gram, you know, RC planes. And I shouldn't say sub gram, that means less than 1 gram. I think they're all like, I think 5-6 grams is
sub ounce.
But sub ounce, you know, RC planes.
Maybe he's talking about smaller than this, but you're that mini old Speedster you made comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah. We, and matter of fact, come October.
It's more like what, 10, 12 inch wingspan?
Yeah, it's 12 inch wingspan, roughly. It's 50%.
Just still pretty small.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, we had a ball at the NEF indoor fly in. We had that out, and we're designing a whole bunch of different. Planes around Dollar Tree foam board still, or Adams Ready Board. I keep saying Dollar Tree.
It's Ready Board by Adams.
Ready Board by Adams. but we have 50% size, and they're all powered around 10-gram motors. So the Air Corps power pods, the all the Hobby King, Great Hobby King planes and beasts from Horizon, you know, that power size can, when you roll it into a ball and you're sick and tired of it and you don't want to spend $40 for a new airframe, you can take it out and build something for, you know, $1 worth of foam board. And they were a blast, and they flew slow. So we left the paper on and left it ugly, and it was phenomenal. So I think anything about a foot and above, it's pretty easy to make fly. Below a foot, you got to get kind of clever.
Yeah.
Hope that helped.
Cool. Next question.
Hi, Flight Test. My name is Nick. I'm calling you all the way from Holland. I'm currently studying aerospace engineering, and we're doing a lot of work about the concept of making commercial airliners drones, basically. And I was wondering what you thought about this from an ethics point of view and even a technological point of view, because from what I've seen, we do have the technology, but it's more of a question of would some people feel comfortable with a computer at the helm. and this is going to be very pertinent in the coming years, I think, and I just wanted to have your take on this. I thought it would be interesting. Anyways, thanks a lot. Take care, and best luck with your future projects.
Boy, I'm going to make people mad. From what I understand, a lot of flights nowadays are pretty much the pilots are there in the beginning and the end, and obviously things go wrong, and they're phenomenally trained. But I believe a lot of it is autopilot, you know, where it's flying autonomously anyway. And, I mean, autopilot is autonomous flight. But I think having an absent pilot or absence is like, you know, if you could have someone perform a heart surgery on you autonomously, wouldn't you really still want a surgeon there in case something went wrong?
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, when you have 300-plus lives potentially at risk.
Yeah, the technology is definitely there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, my dad flies for a living. He flies jets, and actually I was showing him Infinite Flight, which is a full-scale flight simulator, on my iPad the other day, and it's actually really realistic, and it has options like your climb speed. It has autopilot, but the autopilot actually has features like climb speed, altitude hold, heading hold, all this stuff. And I gave him the controls. I was like, here, you want to fly? First thing he did was turn on the autopilot and started adjusting his settings. He's like, okay, you need to drop your speed down. And he was flying the plane, but flying it by pushing buttons rather than actually controlling it with the yoke. So I think it's already kind of there. And they have auto takeoff autopilots, auto landing autopilots. So it's there. I think it's a while. I mean, they can't even get the FAA can't even get their ducks in a row with quadcopters and, you know, drones and stuff flying.
Paper airplanes. Are they drones or are they paper
airplanes? It's going to be a while before they start sending commercial flights with passengers.
I could see military fighters being drones very soon. I mean, they kind of
but
are.
But I think he means, I think, yo, they already have it. Yeah, but I think he meant more like carrying passengers.
Carrying passengers,
and,
yeah.
And I don't think I could put it better than Josh. You know, like it sure, yeah, right now a pilot is arguably not really that necessary, you know, and
that sounds really bad. They are very necessary. I hope people know what I'm saying.
Well, no, I mean, as in the technology has advanced to so far that pilot could execute that from the ground.
Yeah.
But I'm saying why?
Yeah.
You know, that. I mean, that's the question. Well, why? What's the benefit of doing that?
What you have to gain and what you have to lose are totally disproportionate.
Right.
So, yeah.
But in a combat situation, obviously it does make sense to have the pilot on the ground.
Yeah, your body is now the limit of what that fighter can do. The fighter can pull many more Gs than the body can handle. So you remove the pilot, now you have a superior fighter because it can turn quicker, it can fly harder, you know, do crazier bad things. You know, that would
or
kill
make
a
surrogate robot for the human to control.
So you control the robot controlling the plane.
Yeah,
wow. This question took a twist.
It's like Inception.
All right. Well, let's do one more question and then call it quits today.
Hey, Flight Test. My name is Jimmy Kobler. A good friend of mine and I, we've been talking about starting up an organization called the Experimental Model Aircraft Association. It's going to be similar to the Experimental Aircraft Association. And they cater to full-scale home builds, but this would be catering to home-built model aircraft, scratch builds, kit build, and ARFs. I was just wanting to get your opinion on all this, and also I would like to see some of the viewers' opinions on all this. Being a member of this, you'd get like a monthly newsletter of different projects that some of the other members are working on, different tips, and just, you know, RC stuff. So I would really like your opinion on all this, and also the viewers too. I would like to reach out to you guys because you guys have such a large positive influence on the RC community with all that you guys do. And so let me know. Shoot me an email if you're interested in all this. So that'd be great. Bye.
Good question. I think it's awesome anytime someone wants to grow the hobby and connect people, you know, their knowledge. So I wish you all the best with it. There's lots of places like that. I mean, I think this hobby kind of goes over into the creative mindset. You know, it's not very out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of creation, a lot of design, a lot of innovation, you know, the natural.
Yeah,
happens,
I think that's the main thing about it. You know, it's kind of like the golden age of full-scale flight back in the 20s and 30s where people were, you know, building planes in their backyard to go fly. I think it kind of has that same atmosphere, and it's cheap and affordable now that you can literally just piece something together in your garage, take it out, and see if it flies. So,
yeah, the consequence. So wish you luck on that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a big project. Good luck. I think that we should probably wrap it up.
Yeah.
From here.
Well, we should let people know. Today's obviously the day it's airing. It's Monday, the June 16th. But also, we're going to be leaving Wednesday for the Europe meetup. 2 days. Mm-hmm. So we have a meetup. What day is it?
We were going to be meeting up in France. All the details you can find on this podcast page or on the top bar, flighttest.com.
Yeah.
It's going to be June 26th, which is a Thursday, unfortunately. But have about 140 people signed up. So it should be...
More than that. I think it's close to 300.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the exact number is.
On the email? The email thing?
Oh, the email list, yeah. Is quite a few hundred, but I think actually confirmed coming is about 140.
Okay. Well,
selfishly, I want to shake as many hands as possible and meet you guys. So if you guys can make it, I'd love to have the honor of meeting you.
Yeah, that should be great.
Hope to see you guys there.
And hopefully we have a moment, hopefully, in Europe to do a podcast there. I think that would be
awesome.
It'd be a lot of fun. Great. Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. If you can, please go to flighttest.com/iTunes and leave us a rating or a review. Your feedback is very valuable. And obviously, from our comment at the beginning of the podcast today, we do take your feedback seriously. So if you have a thought, leave it for us.
It means a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. All right, thanks, see you guys. Next time.
Yeah, see you. Take care.